Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
You're listening to the Design Build Hunt podcast presented by Whitetail Partners. Here we cover all things whitetail property design, habitat improvement, and hunting strategy. Let's change your property for good. Welcome back to another episode of the Design Build Hunt podcast. On the line with me today, I've got Mr. Sam Billhorn from Wisconsin and Greg Kazmierski from Ohio. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here again, Josh.
Absolutely. I know this is a busy time for you guys to be taking some time away from your other duties to join me, so I do appreciate it. Today, we've got a fan favorite, as I've mentioned before, a design breakdown. I try to mention it at the beginning of the episodes when we do the design breakdowns. Just know that because you have a property that maybe looks similar to this, or you see, hey, I've got a 40-acre property, this is a 40-acre property, therefore I can copy and paste, the designs that we show you will not necessarily work on your property. We show this so that we can teach you about principles behind designing a property. We can help you learn a lot of what goes into it, but we cannot say or guarantee that you can copy and paste a design from something that we show you to your own property, because there's a whole lot that goes into it. You know, the one day on site visit that we do a lot of times is a very, very fun day. Then there's a lot of work that happens in the office on the back end and decisions that we're making because of the data that we've gathered. And so always want to caution people, don't think that it's going to work for you just because you saw it and it's working for someone else. At the same time, there are lots of principles that we can learn. And Sam is going to share a design with us today. I really, really like the look of this design. Lots of open field development going on here. So I'm excited to learn more. Sam, why don't you kick this off by telling me just big picture about the property? How big is it? Where is it at? What were maybe some of the big defining features?
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Josh, for kicking it off. Yeah. So as you mentioned, we do have a 40-acre property here. This is, I'll call it upper Midwest, and we have a creek bottom set up here. And again, Josh kind of teed it up, but these episodes are best consumed on our YouTube channel. The podcast, yeah. We'll do our best to give descriptions and the audio and have good principles there, but to see the design is what this is all about. So please check out our YouTube. But on that, I'll say that this, you know, a creek bottom here, a little bit more of what I would call a river down here, always flowing and really not a lot of crossings on that. So a little bit deeper waterway there. But with this, we have some topography. The from the bottom of the property to the top of the property is maybe a 50, 60 foot elevation change. So we got some decent topography to play on. Obviously, the waterway influences travel. There's timber, there's open field, it's brushy, mature timber. We got kind of a nice mix of everything, which is why I grabbed this one. We're doing some bow hunting setups. We got some firearm setups. We have early season, late season, kind of a whole host of things here that we can tee up, and also a couple of unique principles I want to draw into.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. So walk me through what were some of the, I guess, maybe big picture features. Was there anything that you decided like, okay, this has got to play into the design? Is there a spot on here that it's like, this is the spot and the rest of this design is going to kind of fall out around that?
Sure. And one of the things I should have teed up too in the beginning is that this larger, say, I forget what it is, about a 15-acre field, was all in CRP. So we had some real restrictions there as to what we could do, how much we could take. The amount of food plot here that's drawn up is very defined in its size because of the restrictions on the program that they're in. And maybe not as much open field development as we may have otherwise taken. This is actually, as far as open field goes, pretty basic concepts. I'll get into that here in a bit. But as far as the, we have to use this, and I love to answer that question, Josh, great tee up there. All of our hunting that we, in the designs that we do, is heavily influenced on what I call travel-based hunting. We're analyzing the travel, figuring out how the deer are using the landscape. And in any time that we have topography, that we have defining features like this creek bottom here, and this was a pretty steep bank. There were only a few places that deer were crossing it, and only a couple places really that we, as we were navigating the property, were able to cross it. So just to give you an idea of how steep that was, in most locations, you would need a ladder to get up out of this. And wow. Yeah, and because of that, we've keyed on those locations. In fact, there was two down here in this on this end of the property that there were strong crossings, and they also met up with the movement that was on this side of the drainage. So this little star of movement here, and that's what I call it when there's a handful of different directions coming together, was a key focal point for us. The challenge of it, though, was access. How do we get down into the stand? I don't like to have stands necessarily that penetrate too far into the property. And there was a couple things that we did with that to make this more viable. But we also had access from this other side here on the south side coming up into the property and being able to access that same movement, at least the southern end of it, such that we were able to get at these sets.
Very nice. Very nice. Sam, I'm curious on that point. Like, we don't like to have a lot of stand sites that penetrate too far into the property. As I've been on more and more and worked on more and more properties, I've begun to wonder about this question. How far, or how large of a property, I guess you could say, do you start to get to where you say, I can't hunt the core effectively if I just stay to my boundaries? What's that size? And we're assuming, you know, a square, right? Maybe a basic rectangle of a piece of property. But I'm getting on some properties that I think to myself, if we don't get away from the property border, we're not going to, that buck, if he's in the core of this property, will never make it out in daylight. It's not going to happen.
Sure. I think naturally you start to see that occurring at 80 acres or more, where you might split it or whatnot. And how the property sets up, the access road to it, maybe there's a home or a cabin site that might naturally start to split it as well. One of the reviews I did before, that was certainly the case. And that was a 40-acre property. And we did that one more or less coming right up the gut of the middle of it and hunting out. But that was also analyzing it and saying some of the best hunts were coming to a property edge that was hunting a much larger habitat feature.
Right. Right. Now it makes a ton of sense. Greg, do you have any follow-up questions on this?
Yeah, more so like a point to follow up on. And if there's any more elaborating beyond it, going into the core part of the property, like that little star area that Sam just touched on, I think what I notice in that and what I try to implement in my designs is that it's okay to go in, it's okay to go into that core part of the property as long as you're not really walking by where deer are spending the most amount of time. If I'm ever going to go into the core of a property and bump a deer, I would rather see them be on their feet along a travel corridor like this, and I'm not necessarily walking right along the edge of a bedding area. And that you can see that with the two stand locations by that star is he may bump deer going into those spots because that's just the reality of hunting the core of the property, but it's not going to be bumping deer from a place they're sleeping or eating, which I think is a lot bigger deal than if you're bumping them when they're walking down a runway.
Right.
A couple things I want to throw at you there too, Greg, and some of the tools that we used in this application. Well, first of all, this stand is not one we're going to use, but except for the best times for it. Being a travel-based spot, I'd say pre-rut, rut, this is going to be a phenomenal place to be. But a few things that we did to change or to influence how we get to this. Number one is we're entering through this large bank of switchgrass. And the existing access road he had was on the edge of the switchgrass. And I asked him to move that road into the middle of it, such that you were utilizing, say, 10 yards of it as a screen rather than walking on the adjacent habitat where deer surely are bedding and traveling. I mean, this was a real thicket of bedding through here. And rather than messing that up, let's say, hey, let's back off a little bit. Let's introduce a screen by, instead of having our road on the edge of a field, having it 10 yards into the field, and making that wide. This is a human access roadway. We're going to have it be 10 feet wide, mowed to the ground, something that is not going to be a daylight feature for a buck. And that's how we influence it. Also, our corridor that we have crossing that roadway, we're doing that in a perpendicular fashion so that we're walking right over it. In fact, I might even introduce in season a couple pieces of treetop or something like that that I would set in the roadway such that it would almost block that and make the deer have to go through it. A couple other minor things. The switchgrass bank here, you'll notice this is probably about 30 yards wide. I didn't want to put a regeneration pocket or other habitat feature, edge feathering and so on. I kept this very bland. And we want to make it such that it's not likely a deer would be bedded along that area. You know, if we were bombing right through a bedding area or right adjacent to it, that wouldn't be as good. So that was one intentional setup. And the final thing to mention here too, this, what I indicate with this white box here, this is what I call unimproving the ground. And that's basically eliminating habitat. So we're going to have it be mowed. Maybe if there's brushy areas, maybe a seat, you know, there's some cedars in here, maybe removing those such that it's not of interest for bedding. And it's going to be very apparently that's where the hunter access comes through. That's also going to play into our corridor, trying to pinch that down into the best area and play into our hand as we're setting up this set.
I like it. I like it. Sam, let's jump up to the large CRP area. This is something that, you know, with different landowners, their property may be enrolled in some sort of conservation program. We've got several of them down here. They may not look quite like they do in the Midwest, but things like shortleaf, things like longleaf pine restoration areas, we've got to be very, very careful with what we do. You know, in those particular areas, we've got to stay within certain boundaries, certain parameters, and it also determines what we do on the rest of the property. We can spray certain things and can't spray other things. We can burn at certain times of the year and we can't burn at other times of the year. So we've got to be real, real careful with what we do and even how we treat those stands that I might otherwise make a different decision, but, you know, with our hands kind of being tied, so to speak, in not necessarily a negative way, but certainly determining what we do. What were you having to work with here? And what are some of the creative ways that you were able to provide quality setups and a quality plan despite kind of, you know, being dealt a hand that maybe you wouldn't have chosen?
Sure. So what I have here, we have access here from this west side, and we were able to get around this west property boundary, the north side over here. So we knew we would be having hunter access around this perimeter. That also worked really well. Just into the switchgrass bank, about halfway in, was the ridge. So there's a C-shaped, L-shaped ridge here, which played in great. You could walk all day around this edge and not be disturbing anything within. It was out of sight, sound, scent, all that was, you really have great access, which is why we had this blind location chosen here. Also, as you can see from this finger of timber, those who are familiar with reading that in hill country, you're going to know that this is a drainage coming up into the field, a lower elevation. So our lowest elevation was at this finger in here, strong bedding throughout. This was a core area we didn't want to have anything to do with as far as any sort of human intrusion. A lot of that deer activity is going to come up out of that lower area. They could scent check this field, all that good stuff. And then also from a functional standpoint, how we're going to plant this, both the configuration of it, how it follows the topography. You could have long poles in here with your planting equipment and have it be easier to manage these fields. It also helps with erosion. You could rotate crops easily. It looks like a pretty basic design as far as the various crops we have in here. However, that's intentional because this is primarily a rifle setup, though you could do it because of the configuration of a travel route through the plot. It could also be archery, especially with some soft mass trees and all that. But again, back to your question of the restrictions and such, we could take 2 acres out, which is the area of this field. We could take 2 acres out of it and put it into food plot. And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, we could soften these edges and make it perhaps a little bit more aesthetically pleasing as to how this would work. But functionally, it's great. And I think really how that lays on the landscape and the higher elevation of the blind here, this blind could darn near be on the ground and you'd see everything here. It was a really nice setup. And then within the core of this, both the naturally existing warm season grass based mix that this existing CRP was, it's very, very tall in the fall. But I asked him to work with his program director and talk about how they could introduce wildlife pockets within it to either use other CRP mixes or if it could be permissible, some plantings to break up that grass. You know, it was a continuous monoculture of grass, which deer are going to like to bed on the edges, but not so much out in the middle of it. I do think in the lower elevation along this ditch, they're definitely bedding in there, and that could be quite good. Where he wasn't, or he didn't have restrictions along the edge to do some edge feathering, dropping some trees and introducing bedding along those edges. Again, all of this is really core to the property that we didn't want to penetrate into it with any sort of human intrusion. But then over here, similar to how I was describing before, we have a straight as an arrow entry point here with a road for some very sensitive mid-season stands. As well as a really nicely configured food plot, a kill plot here that we had that's going to gain a lot of travel during really all parts of the season. And this was an existing blind that he had there that we were trying to work with.
Gotcha. And that plot right there, I'm curious what you decided to go with in kind of a smaller plot in a timbered setting. What's the size of this plot? What did you decide to go with
there? Yeah, so I'll just pull it up here and grab the acreage. This is a little under a half acre plot, had a really nice natural pinch point on it. He did a good job of maintaining the natural surroundings that it is. This was kind of a flat here, a nice, the shape that this occurred in was a flat where it got very steep on the backside of it, incredibly steep between here and the property line, which is also what influenced this travel route over here. So this is a very steep hillside through here, and this travel route on the toe of that slope was very, very strong. But back to here, I would suggest in this to have really an all season blend of clover and chicory, something that's going to be pretty browse tolerant, perennial, that would be really an attraction throughout all seasons. It's not going to be as good later season, but when we're getting into the rut, even post rut, some of those late season firearms seasons, we're not going to be back here probably as much. We maybe would lean on having some late dropping soft mass trees, late dropping apples in here for that reason, maybe to have that attraction later on. But this was really what I would think to be more of an early to mid season stand, whereas we're going to back out to some of the main grains and other locations here when it gets into those later firearm seasons.
Gotcha. Greg, anything to play off of there?
Sorry, I had to take my mute off. No, I'm just like really loving the design and how it seems like you just did such a good job taking advantage of all those like intricate features that the property has to offer and just really build off of them. And I'm just like just really loving looking at it. This is a really beautiful design.
Yeah, I've got a 40 acre square that I'm about to design right now. And Sam, I think I'll do what I tell the listeners not to and just copy and paste this one on.
Well, if you can pair the same topography, habitat features, landowner, and hunting styles together, then you can just go ahead and make yourself an overlay.
There you go. There you go.
I feel like too, because I always have other guys' designs up on my other monitor when I'm drawing my own, as far as like shapes and stuff like that go. And it, in a weird way, it just sparks really good ideas. Even though it is completely different, I can have like a twisted way in my head to relate this to a property that does look completely different. So I always enjoy looking at it from like a different perspective. I think that's really beneficial.
Yeah, sparks a lot of ideas. So tell me about that that purple. Is that some fencing you have here? I mean, we just discussed fencing in another episode that we recorded. So tell me what's going on with that.
Yeah, thank you. Nice, simple use of it here. So this gentleman here really wanted to have easy hunts from access standpoint. So this was his access route coming in off of this corner of the property. Wanted to have an easy place that he could take his kids to a blind for repeatable hunts within a nice bow distance. So kind of trying to fit all those features together, this corner stuck out to me. It was a nice clean pasture, good grade and soil here that we could definitely get a kill plot in here. And the travel, the way it worked out, there was a, at the top of this drainage, and I described this before, super steep, but they deer were constantly working their way around the end of this. And what we wanted to have within this plot was gathering up that movement with good screening, and that's what the switchgrass is here on the perimeter of it, and also give opportunities. And there's, you know, this natural corridor that was coming up the hill here from the bottom and a couple other routes shooting in here. But what we also had existing were deer using the edge of this ag field and coming into the blind. So deer would probably, if left uncontrolled here, would filter in and out of this plot through this this area right along the blind. We wanted to limit that. We wanted to encourage them to be out front and move parallel or perpendicular rather in front of that blind. So a simple solution is a small piece of fence. I just checked the measurement on it. This is a 150-foot piece. It gets a little ways out into the ag field where it's very open, and then it gets it goes adjacent to that blind access. This also helps with clean access. You know, you wouldn't be bumping a deer in this area. This fence would extend maybe 20 yards past the blind here. And what that's going to encourage is all of these routes into this plot from the adjacent property are going to filter around that and get in, you know, get in front of the blind rather than really just filtering all around and through that blind area.
Right, right. I love it. I love it. So Sam, the ag that's in that field, how did that inform your food plot selection and variety on this property?
Yeah, so this ag is primarily corn and soybeans throughout the entire region. It's pretty, you know, it's really, really heavy in that, as much of the Midwest is. And I looked at it and said, you know, that is a good food source during the night. And, you know, they're deer, you know, if you want to call a destination food plot, a lot of times within a much larger ag area, you're saying, look, the deer headed out to these big, big fields at night. They're not going to get there, though, until dark. And because of that, the plots that we have, even this 2-acre plot that I spent some time discussing on before, deer aren't going to move beyond that until after dark. I think it's a good probability because of the elevation change. You know, they got a nice heavy bank of grass all around this thing. It's lower in elevation. Always like to capture that whenever I can, that they're going to use these plots. But then as far as what goes in them, I just want to see diversity on the landscape throughout our plots. On these travel based, we haven't spent much time talking about that. I always like to see travel moving through the plots, trail plots, things like that. This darker green, as I have it indicated, is going to be more of that clover chicory blend that's going to be all season. The yellows are going to be spring planted grain. So this would be, you know, corn and soybeans both for use here. If they're able to fence it, even better, because once these bigger ag fields are cleaned off, this, you know, might be the only source they have. And then deer are really going to load up in there because we're kind of limited on, because we're kind of limited on size, you know, the areas here, you know, only being a half acre, it's pretty small. And you may have to defer to greens only. But if you have the equipment, which he does, and the opportunity to do it, that really might be worth having for that late season. You could be filling deer up in here. And then these darker, the neon, that is the brassica. And you could do a summer planted fall greens for forage in those as well.
Right. I really like the thought of doing doing some fencing around that, maybe an electric fence or something like that on that soybean. I think that could be absolutely dynamite, because outside of this property, you know, if you zoom out, it looks really good where you're like, wow, look at all that food around it. And it's like, yeah, but come the end of October or early, you know, once those fields are harvested outside, there's going to be nothing. I mean, they're going to have some waste grain and then very quickly be very, very hungry. So if you can have some, you know, even small 0.4 acres, I think it was, with the beans and the corn there, if you can just even have some small options for the deer herd, you'll own the herd later in the season.
Right. And this is, you know, only, I just checked the perimeter on it. It's only 700-800 feet of perimeter. To even put a hard fence up there, a welded wire fence, you could do it.
Right.
And it'd be some work, but man, to pull that fence late in the season and just open it up, you might have something special on your hands.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Anything else that sets this design apart from others that you've shown?
Yeah, I think multiple points of access. You know, a lot of times we spend a good chunk of time talking about access, haven't done that as much here. But the fact that he can get at it from two sides is really a high quality feature as far as giving him the ability to hunt this. He would not be able to hunt this corner, the southeast corner over here. He would not be able to get there because he would just have to pound through his property and cross this bank here. It made it really difficult. Similarly, I'll make a point of saying the adjacent property over here, they have no way of getting at this whatsoever. So he has another maybe 6 acres here of strong bedding that is really not even going to be hunted by the neighbor. So some of those features can play to your advantage too, if you have strong topography like this property does.
Sure, sure. All right, Sam, the question I like to end with on these breakdowns, from what stand location are you going to get the text that he's got a good one on the ground?
I'll go back to where we started and say that star movement, or that this southern access here, these two travel-based routes, and this one is a close second or third, I'll say, but right in this bottom here, the travel that is going to move, and I should zoom out here for a second to show it, you know, this cover extends well beyond his property, and deer are going to be covering a lot of ground, and for them to pass through this movement, it's gonna happen. And I would say that's a strong option. However, too, that I'm talking bigger bucks in that pre-rut or rut time frame, but I would also say that the setups that we've made in his priorities for his kids to go out there and have easy to get to hunts, I would say it's going to be just as well that I would receive a text at any time in the season, maybe even opening day, that they have a doe down or a small buck down in one of these perimeter lot plots that are really easy to get to for him and his family.
There you go. I love it. Well, folks, like Sam mentioned earlier, if you have not checked out our YouTube channel, you really need to get over there and look at that, because if you just listen to the audio version of this, you missed quite a bit. So head over to our YouTube channel where you can see this and a bunch of other design breakdowns. Lots of other good content coming out there as well. But thank you for listening today. And Sam, Greg, thank you guys for joining me. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you found this helpful, do us a favor and leave us a review wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And if you want to keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at whitetail_partners, on Facebook, Whitetail Partners LLC, on YouTube by simply searching Whitetail Partners, or online at whitetailpartners.com.